Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Computer Weekly Downtime Upload Podcast. I'm Cliff Sarin and my guest today is Keith Nolan, Head of Technology Delivery at the Royal Ballet and Opera. Hello Keith, and thank you very much for joining me today. The Royal Ballet and Opera, is that the same as the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden?
Absolutely is, yep, yeah, same place, yep.
Yeah. Why the change in name? How did that happen?
I think we've always had ballet for a number of years at the Royal Opera House. Originally came over from Sadler's Wells a very long time ago. Mm. And we felt that we just wanted to make sure that people realised, because often our patrons would ask the question, why is the ballet at the Opera House? And so we wanted to really make sure that our company name reflected the fact that we do both ballet and also opera here at the Royal Opera House. So the building will remain the Royal Opera House. We're not going to try and change that name, but we are making sure that we really do put ballet up there with opera, and that patrons know that if they want to see world-class ballet and opera, that they can come here to the Royal Opera House to enjoy it.
So opera and ballet, what does technology have to do with opera and ballet?
That's a great question, actually. So a lot of people, I get that quite a bit, actually, Cliff, in the sense of how is technology involved in putting on a show in Covent Garden? Well, I mean, these days, it's fair to say any business, no matter the business, especially the ticketing business, does run on IT. And so, you know, we have that duty to make sure that we're thinking about a technology strategy and a digital strategy that allows our customers to buy tickets to see these shows. And of course, as you know, since COVID, the world has changed quite a lot. Mm. And one of those things that we saw even in the West End theatres and of course here at the Opera House is that people choose to purchase differently now since that COVID period. So about 95% of our tickets are actually bought online through digital means. And of course, when you're running a ticketing service, then all the other sort of attachments come along to that. So, you know, servers, infrastructure, cloud, yes. That's all part of what we do day to day. And of course, we run a fantastic website. We have shops, we have restaurants, we're open to the public during the day, and people can just come in and visit us. So we are a public attraction, a site, and of course, that requires lots of digital experiences, lots of systems like point of sale and also, you know, digital signage and those kind of things to make our spaces attractive to guests and tourists around London.
I was going to ask you about, one of the things, you know, that obviously came about post-COVID or during COVID, I guess, was was the idea of streaming live events. And is that something that's happened that you have experience of?
Yeah, so streaming actually came out for us during that COVID era. You know, I think it's fair to say, like most, again, the West End and most arts organisations, we felt that we needed to maintain that connection for our patrons and also for wider than that, for the country, for the community that sits around dance and singing in particular, and try to offer something back during those kind of darker times when we were all at home. And we wanted to make sure that the art form could be represented. So we actually started increasing the amount of content that we sort of showed online through our social channels, through YouTube, even through Instagram. And we were making sure that we were staying in contact with our patrons. And that naturally then evolved into a discussion around, well, wouldn't it be great if actually we shared, similar to other arts organisations, our content on a more regular basis, and that people could subscribe to that content and gain regular access to also additional content as well. So maybe some interviews. And so we came across this idea of building out what we call ROH Stream, and we launched that just about a year after COVID actually really hit. And we've been going strong ever since. So, you know, we're putting regular content recorded from stage onto that platform, and then as a subscriber, just like any other VOD platform. So if you think of the likes of larger platforms like Netflix or Amazon, you can download an app on your Amazon Fire Stick or on your Apple TV or on your Google TV and you or LG TV. You can literally get that app and you can then stream our content and our VODs. So really exciting to be able to share that with our patrons.
From conversations I think I've had with you when I think it was a meeting a few weeks ago, seems like you're a very busy person, or at least the IT team is very busy. I mean, can you just explain to our audience about how much free time there really is at the Royal Ballet and Opera? And then how do you get a chance to fit in the IT work that needs to be done?
Yeah, so I think it is an extremely busy time in the world of IT at the Opera House. You know, often what the public don't see is all the kind of services that sit around, not just running the business that you'd expect the kind of typical IT function to support, HR, finance, the usual stuff that you'd expect in any business, but also things like supporting broadcasts, for example. So one of the other things that we do is we have a broadcast team. And we actually stream out to a lot of the UK cinemas as well. And we do that 13 times a year. So there's a lot of IT infrastructure that sits around that broadcast to cinemas. And we used to say, you're no more than 30 minutes away from a great show by the Royal Ballet and Opera, because you could walk down to your Odeon or your View and you could see a poster of Cinderella on at Christmas, for example, and really get into the spirit of that. And so the IT teams need to maintain things like the internet connections, the obviously the firewalls, the broadcast systems. And we're using pretty advanced stuff in terms of precision time protocol, for example, for our network. So if you imagine a larger organization like the BBC, you may not realize that the Opera House actually has its own TV gallery studio built in actually on site. So we do run as if you were directing a TV show, multiple cameras in the auditorium when we do streams to the cinema. And IT works with our technical specialists in the Opera House to really provide that support for that system and that broadcast. Wider than that as well, what, again, most members of the public may not know is we also provide a learning platform. We have an entire department dedicated to providing learning platform content to teachers across England, where they can access what we call create and sing and create and dance programs that allow students both in secondary and primary education to really get lesson plans and to get video guidance on how to sing, how to dance. And so if you think about the back-end infrastructure that it takes to run both that broadcast element and that learning program, there's a lot of cloud services and servers and computers needed to power all that and provision all that. So you could say we're a very busy team.
Yes, I can see that. I mean, the organisation is publicly funded. It's taxpayers' money. And I guess the headlines would be, well, you know, it's all about the ballet and the opera and putting on a good shows and events and things like that. So because of IT being sort of a very much a back office function, I mean, how do you manage those costs in a way that you're able to achieve what you want to achieve without impacting what, you know, the wider organisation is goal, what it wants to do, which is, you know, put on great ballet and opera?
I think, like most public organisations, you know, we have a duty because we do get funded by the Arts Council, and that makes up about half of our overall funding, as well as, of course, the ticket sales that we make for our shows and donations that are generously given by our patrons. We have that duty, as you've kind of highlighted there, Cliff, to make sure that we're responsible with our technology spend. And I'll be honest, it is a balancing act. You know, often you have a big global name But we, you know, as an organization size, we're about roughly a mid-market size organization, you know. So we have around about 1,500 staff, both full-time and part-time casuals in the theater industry, as we call them, working. So when we're looking at technology in particular, we're always looking at technologies that can really, you know, bring the total cost of ownership down. And that's where we work with providers like Nutanix, for example, that allow us to kind of save money by hybridizing some of that more central infrastructure. So very much, you know, as you'll hear in other sectors as well, we're always looking at bringing those costs down through clever use of technology and sort of more cost efficient technology. So rather than paying high costs, as you say, focusing the spend in IT in the best way possible so that we can spend more money really on doing the bit that we do really, really well, which is put on great world-class leading shows.
Okay, so you mentioned Nutanix. I mean, how did that journey begin? What, where are you now with that?
So actually, the journey began even before COVID. You know, originally we had two large data centers, not uncommon in the business world for a business to operate, you know, multiple data centers to have a disaster recovery, a backup solution to run your services, and the cost of ownership was quite high for those. So the reason we started working with Nutanix and looking at a hybridized solution, again, you mentioned like public funds. We were very aware, like most organizations, that whether we had private data centers or we existed fully in the cloud, our total cost of ownership was really quite high. And we needed to kind of work out how we bring that cost of ownership down for our infrastructure. So Nutanix, we started an engagement with them. We also talked to a fellow arts organization, the Science Museum, for some advice, because they'd gone down a similar route. And we kind of said, well, how do we actually, you know, bring in cost savings to our overall infrastructure stack? And what we found with Nutanix, by hybridizing, by having sort of the hybrid cloud, if you like, being able to back up certain things in the cloud, but also run things on premise locally, we kind of got the best of both worlds. And overall, that meant we could go from two data centers to one on our original journey, which was a huge cost saving. So I think overall we slashed our costs by about 25% in terms of infrastructure costs in the course of that move. And then recently we've gone that next step, which I'm really proud of, is that we've actually, because we were in two clouds for a lot of our infrastructure, we've now moved from just being across those two clouds into a central cloud with another, and getting rid of that final data center and having another region where we store our data. And so we've got that triplicate kind of recovery path. And again, we've slashed our costs by a further 25%. So across the last 5 years, overall, we've halved our total infrastructure bill, saving hundreds of thousands of pounds.
So it's hundreds of thousands. Spend. That was going to be my question.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of pounds actually in cost, which is, again, you know, allowed us to invest one in better technologies elsewhere, but also making sure that we return some of that funding back into the art form, which is always, you know, our choice if we can.
And you mentioned the cloud, and understand that you migrated from Azure to AWS. Is that correct? Is that right?
Yes. So we originally had our cloud spread across Azure, quite common, and AWS. Historically, AWS, because we've worked in that for our website infrastructure for a long time, and Azure, we had a lot of our corporate IT infrastructure. Mm-hmm. More recently, we've moved into Nutanix NC2 in AWS. So I'll be very specific here, because that's the real beauty of Nutanix, is what we're working with AWS is dedicated hosts. So it's not AWS native, it is very much Nutanix in AWS. And what that affords us is more granular control. Mm. And what I mean by that for your listeners is that when we're building servers to run applications, or we're using containers, it allows us more granular control over right sizing the performance of those things. So often in the cloud world, if you're building a server, you're kind of defined by the levels of server you can then move to when you scale. Mm. And of course, being a ticketing business, we have busy sale days where we need to bring our infrastructure up and down. So with that in mind, using Nutanix means that if we wanted to focus a little bit more, say, on compute, but we didn't lots of memory, for example, we could do that. Whereas if you're going with more of the native cloud, you don't get that level of control. You kind of are stuck with going to the higher level of CPU, the higher level of RAM, and you might not need that. So by using those dedicated hosts, again, it's allowed us to, one, save on cost, but two, have that granular control for our applications, which I think many in the IT industry are now kind of crying out for.
You know, beyond the things that you've spoken about in the cloud and the infrastructure in the cloud, one of the things that I found quite interesting in the panel discussion that you took part in is how augmented reality is being used. Or was it virtual reality? Well, it was one of those sorts of headset type technologies. And I mean, could you talk through how it's being used and why it's being used?
Sure. So understanding it makes sense that our stage is a very, very busy place. You know, we're a Victorian era theatre. We have one stage, a stage that is needed quite a lot for a lot of different things, mainly rehearsals. You know, we pride ourselves in being one of the best in the world at what we do. And of course, if you think about what makes up a West End show, you've got lighting, you've got sound, you've got that video element sometimes as well. It's not always possible to do what we call a tech rehearsal on that stage because we do multiple productions at the Opera House. So in difference to, say, a standard theatre that may have one production run for a 6-month or 12-month period, it might surprise you to hear that the Opera House might run two or three productions on the main stage the same day. We might be doing a rehearsal for one show that's upcoming during the day, and then we'll actually do a performance that night. And our stage and our house allows us to do that. But that doesn't really leave much time, if you think about it, for testing the light. So if we have an artistic director that wants to see, like, well, how would that light look if I pointed it in this area, if I pointed it at an object like a grand piano, for example, or a prop? By using augmented reality and virtual reality with our lighting visualization teams and some advanced technology, our total cost comes down because we don't need to book the stage, we don't interrupt our main schedule, and we're able to actually do things in parallel with things like lighting and sound by using those technologies. So overall, our production costs and our stage costs come down for the actual stage time. So it's a really fantastic use of technology, and it's really great to see the directors coming in and sitting down in that visualization suite using that technology and being effectively immersed in a light show.
Yes, and I guess the sound and light engineers can rehearse to the nth degree because they're working in an augmented or virtual reality setup.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, we're very proud of our lighting teams here, and we're very proud of our sound teams and the fact that they've got this technology and able to use it. And they are a big part of that. You know, they're specialists in what they do, and they work very closely with the technology department to really bring the best of the current iteration of that technology into play. And I think that what you're seeing is how we're, again, if you think about the taxpayer money element, again, we're using innovative technology to lower the cost so we can again spend that money on what the public expects us to spend it on, which is great costumes, great performance, great artists, and again trying to you know showcase Britain's art form on stage. So yeah, it's fantastic to be a part of that.
Okay. Well, Keith, well, what a fascinating story, actually. But I just wanted to ask you finally your final thoughts, really, on I mean, we've just gone into, I mean, for some it would be science, you know, science fiction almost, the ability to use virtual reality to do the things that you're achieving. But if you were to look at what technologies and things that are coming out that really excite you, what would that be?
Oh, there's so much coming out in technology, I think, that excites me. But obviously, I'm going to go with the one that's on everybody's lips these days, which is, of course, AI and further automation. You know, if we can use AI tracking, for example, and I saw some great technology at the ICE show in Barcelona recently, where manually at the moment, we point certain lights at our main stage actors. And the reason for that is before it wasn't possible to get a computer to track the movement of a ballet dancer. If you imagine they're jumping over stage, they're doing twirls, and they move very fast. But the modern sort of approach is now where you can wireframe using AI cameras, you know, a person moving across the stage, and use very clever AI to predict and move the lights with them is a really powerful and I think really exciting place to be. It generally means we can have more lighting options in the future for how we light our shows. And again, if we look back at that augmented reality and that virtual reality, it's just the next step in actually putting that on stage. So taking what we've done in augmented and virtual reality and then using great tools like AI tracking to kind of automate those light shows. So I think for the audience, the most exciting for me is they're going to get a better show and it's going to be much more impressive when they see it on stage, some of the stuff that's coming up in the future as a light show.
Oh, that sounds absolutely amazing, Keith. Well, thank you ever so much for taking part in today's podcast. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.